Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya, a.k.a. The Dark Cloud. Okay, a lot of stuff here in the boxing world to talk about, and a couple of rants for us to have here. You know what's funny? Check this out. So we get a lot of emails here on the Leaving the Ring Radio at leavingtheringgmail.com, and some good, but a lot of times it's always bad. But you know, you get a lot of folks that hate what we have to say, and even people that I know personally that are in the industry that honestly they're pretty upfront with me. They'll keep it real. I mean, you know what I mean? What the kids are now saying, we keep it real, and they keep it real with me. They'll tell me, you know, I love the show, but it just irks me sometimes, and some of the things you guys say. And the reason why it irks them sometimes, and this is a promoter telling me this, you know, not a very big promoter, but a promoter that does enough that is that if I mention the name, he's recognizable. But it's, the promoter tells me, he goes, look, here's the thing. You guys say certain things that make me cringe, that make me say, God damn it. But at the end of the day, the reason why is because what you guys say is true. Because you guys always are on point in what you guys are talking about. You're by far one of the only radio shows out there that are willing to talk about situations in the fight game that nobody's willing to touch. Now, it's flattering. So we get the emails that kind of flood through the leavingtheringgmail.com. And, you know, like I said, a lot of them are bad. And some of them are like saying, like, you know what? You guys don't talk about this. You guys don't talk about that. But here's the thing, that we throw out so much content, so much stuff we review, analyze, and investigate, if that's what you want to call it, that things can be missed or just kind of surpassed that you don't even know about it. So I have to kind of like re-throw it out there. This is what we've done. This is who we are. This is what we do. So somebody, this was pretty interesting. Somebody asked me, hey, you know, when you guys go on your guys' rant on Leaving the Ring Radio, I think you guys should have a name to it, maybe a title to these rants so that we know more or less you guys are going to do it, and it keeps us on the air with you guys. And I'm like, wow, that's what keeps you on the air is when we throw these rants, when the dark cloud decides to storm, when 97 decides to be rough. Okay, so I decided, why not? So here's the segment. It's going to be called Everyone Hates Mondays. Why? Because on Sunday, you're thinking about it. You got to go back to work. You got to go back to reality. You know, that phrase, living the dream. Everybody hates Mondays. We all hate Mondays. It's hard for us to get up early in the morning. It's hard for us to kind of get the motor oiled up so we can keep moving. And we know that we got four dreadful days that we have to look forward to the place or cubicle or workforce that you have to be stuck at and look at some everyday people or deal with a really shitty boss. So guess what? Everybody hates Mondays. So when we do a rant, it's going to be called Everybody Hates Mondays. Now, if you want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. You can speak to myself, 97 Ruff, a.k.a. Dave Duenas, or The Dark Cloud, a.k.a. Mr. Gabriel Montoya. Tell us what your Monday, the Monday that you hate here on Leaving the Ring. Mr. Gabriel Montoya, what's going on, brother? Let me ask you, what is your Monday? What's your Monday that you hate the most? He's just putting himself on mute. I can tell you that right now. Nope. It's not. Oh, okay. We're going to have him call back in. I'll tell you that. That's one of my Mondays that I hate very much here when he's on. Here on Leaving the Ring. Let's get into something here. Let's see. Hold on. There he's back on with us. Let's see. Gabe, are you there with us?
Sorry, the bat phone rang, and
and I fumbled it and it fell. But I do have some nice news. But let me, before we jump into that, I'm sure we'll progress to it at some point with the big announcement today. So I'll file it away for a second. But it's definitely something that's a direct rebuttal and kind of new news. So sorry about that. How you doing, Dave? Happy Thursday.
Hey, happy Thursday. I was actually, I was talking about Everybody Hates Mondays, the new segment about our rant, because somebody said we should have a title for our rant to let them know that we're about to go into one of our crazed rants that we normally have here on Leaving the Ring Radio, because it's not always about good news here on our show. It's always about, as they say, real talk here on Leaving the Ring Radio. So it's Everybody Hates Mondays. I wanted to hear your Monday that you hate very much. I'll tell you mine in a short bit right now, but I'm curious to hear yours.
You know, now that I'm on hiatus, I'm good with Monday. It's getting ready for the next round. My hate thing, I kind of hate how weak the media is. I guess I'll just pick that and how they don't really pick up threads. There's kind of a big story happening to me, and not to me personally, but, in my opinion, two of them really, and they're just leaving it completely alone. So, if I had to pick a Monday, type of scenario, it would be that I'm not really regularly on the beat anymore, and guys just aren't really picking it up. When Alex Riza leaves, kind of disappears, nobody's picking that thread up. Where's the exclusive with him? Let's answer that question. Why did he leave? We have a really weird video from Ali Secback going, basically like feeding Robert Garcia a line of, well, he's good what he does. Yeah, well, what is that? What is it that he does? You're so good at it, why are you firing him? It's weird, and they leave that alone. This Jesse Vargas thing. When Ryan McInerney printed with Boxing Scene, I was like, that's just not, he hasn't done his due diligence. That story's undercooked. Jesse Vargas isn't in VADA, as far as I knew. The other guys hadn't agreed to it. I mean, I sent out a query after that story came out. It was a few days ago, maybe earlier in the week, maybe Monday, maybe it was even last Friday, to Steve Bash over the weekend, and said, look, this Ryan Mack story came out, and do you have a rebuttal? No answer back, And then he gets to the press conference, and the media allows him to just kind of blow it off, like, well, my fighter didn't know anything about it. We're not doing it. And I guess he revealed that, he had tested positive previously for marijuana, which I don't think is a big deal. And right. VADA doesn't test for marijuana. That's how little of a deal it is. But, again, nobody really picks it up. It's not really a story. And I know, Victor Conte had a rebuttal to that, to what Steve Bash said, and nobody picked that up. And I know that statement was sent out to a bunch of people. Like, I'm not regularly on the beat, but I'm in the loop of certain things. So you look at that story, and then today when I just tweeted and I checked with VADA, and you saw there was another story on Boxing Scene again, and Ryan Mack's story was on there. And this time it was an interview with Jesse talking about 365 testing. He's going to do this whole thing, and it sounded like he was in it. And as far as I knew at that point, he wasn't. I didn't even know that was on the table for him. I thought they were just trying to get this fight with Novikov test. So now, as it turns out, Novikov's not doing the testing. There's a variety of reasons. Like Steve Bash, the promoter of Novikov, said it was political stuff. He also cited that there are certain writers that are favorable to Conte. I mean, just say my name if you're going to say it. I didn't even break the story. Like I had tweeted about it earlier, probably before, way before Ryan Mack's story came out. But at that point, I understood that people were going to do it and everything was fine. And then, 10 days later or however long, it would be 2 weeks later, here we are now, and I'm here to tell you that, VADA confirmed it. Neither guy is in VADA testing of any kind.
Wow.
So do your due diligence, chase it down to the end, and then pick it up. So that drives me crazy, and it kind of makes them look chintzy as opposed to, maybe just doing the whole due diligence. Maybe I shouldn't have tweeted about it, but at the beginning it sounded like it was okay. But I think there's a lot of reasons why it wasn't okay and how that happened, and people should be making people accountable at top rank, at Steve Bash's doorstep, and even asking Jesse, well, why didn't you go ahead along with it? Although I don't think it's really on him, If he's going to do the 365 thing and talk about it, I think that he should do it, and just begin it. But that's a separate issue from trying to get a fight tested and it doesn't happen. for a variety of reasons. I don't think it's just at Steve Bash on him or on Novikov. I think it's on a variety of people, none of whom are Jesse Vargas or Victor Conte. I think they both – he was going to pay for it for both guys. So it's an interesting situation. Everybody's leaving alone. There you go. There's my Monday. Sorry. A little bit of a rant.
Here's my everyday – here's my everyone hates Mondays rant here. And I, you know what? I was going to go on, in on that as well as you. I was going to talk a little bit about that. And but yeah, I'll just leave myself to something else here. I tell you what, I hate people that retract what they originally said, and people jump on the wagon, and you know what, they back them up 100% because they believe whatever comes out of whoever they idolize mouths. For instance, Floyd Mayweather, when the Golden Boy stable was falling apart, and Dick Schaefer decided to jump ship, Floyd was quick to jump with him with no life jacket. Ellerbe's the one that was like, whoa, wait a minute. No, we're interested with working with Golden Boy, but the only fight that we'd be interested in working with is with a Canelo rematch. Now, here's a funny thing. Now, I've talked to numerous people in the business, and just recently I was even told that, Dave, I don't think Golden Boy is going to last. I don't think they're going to survive this wave of Heyman and Floyd Mayweather leaving the Golden Boy banner. And I said, you know what? I was like, I didn't say anything. I listened. But here's the thing. The rematch between Floyd Mayweather and Marcos Maidana, it's got a stamp of Floyd Mayweather Promotions on it. Now, so here's the big question. Is it really Golden Boy that can't survive without Mayweather and Heyman? Or is it Heyman and Golden Boy can't survive without them? Without Golden Boy Promotions. And if you remember this, when all this kicked off, I said, because I talked to some people that are in the promotional deal, and they made a great point. They said, listen, it's not as easy as you think. If you don't have the right staff, the right people, or a large staff to promote a big fight, it's kind of impossible. It's going to fall apart. You need the key players to push a big fight. I think Mayweather Promotions getting their license in New York City, but even overall, even Heyman and Schaefer and all these other guys understood that there was only a small key of the piano leaving the chords, and there's a lot of other chords in the whole Golden Boy stable that make the mechanics work. So is it Golden Boy that can't function? Or is it really Floyd Mayweather and Heyman that can't function without – I mean, look, Heyman has the right idea, swallow all the competition by signing all the fighters, but that makes no big difference, right, Gabriel? If you can't have the right people to push the fights and really kind of orchestrate things around for them to make it easier for them to get their fighters out there on dates and to make it smooth when it comes to press and to make things functionable day of fights.
Well, I don't think anybody, you know, it's an interesting point. I mean, I think just looking at it all, the thing that's driven me kind of nuts, and I guess this is another kind of Monday thing, people don't take a long view anymore. You know, it's a very reactive press. And I think stepping off of press row and kind of looking out, like today watching, you know, the news, I woke up and I could see that Floyd had announced Maidana 2 just by a couple tweets. So I did my little search and then, you know, found the source of it, you know, and then Floyd announcing, talking about it. That's really all you need to know at this point. Everything else after that, you know, was just making fun of the name Mayhem, which is pretty funny. It's not in May. It's just, you know, people always talk about him being like a genius. You know, then there's weird stuff like that that's kind of chintzy. And I've been at, you know, Floyd fights before. And the opening doesn't seem very cool. Like, I don't know if you've been there live for the Top Rank that you know, this is champions video, whatever that is, We Are Champions, whatever the hell they call it. But it's like a montage of all the great fights, you know, Hagler Hearns and, you know, Duran is up there, and just, it's fantastic. And it really, you know, it's they play it wherever, but it's such a good little movie. It gets the audience just revved up, you know, and it's on this big, you know, cone kind of, you know, shaped, you know, HD screen and everything, and everybody goes wild. Floyd fights, I don't see anything that good. I mean, the last one, the clowns. I mean, I can't believe more memes made out of that. The goofy guy with the red afro, and I mean, it was ridiculous. Like, he had bad circus performers. That's his level of quality. And I think about that when people say they don't that Golden Boy doesn't need him. That they've got more of an infrastructure than they used to.
Seriously, though,
they've gotten rid of some people. They've gotten rid of some Sharks and Binko and Schaefer, but and even
right.
David Iskowich, I think, was a key guy. But maybe he'll return now that the soulless people, I'm sorry, now that Binko and Schaefer are gone. We'll see. You know, there were some good people. You know, like Nicole Sparks, I knew her and dealt with her. It's kind of the like marketing PR wing. Really good person, you know. Shouldn't be vilified. I think it was just a victim of who she answered to. People just kind of, if you're connected to somebody, you're out. You know, that's just business. But to me, I think it's just, the short-sightedness that people have of picking sides of who's right in terms of Showtime and all that, you know. But watching everybody's stories, as I was saying, like kind of taking the long view and taking a step back, watching everybody's stories come out, like one after the other, pretty much everybody just rewriting what we already knew, but having to do it for their site to get that Mayweather hit and just kind of sucking on the Mayweather teeth. Regardless if it's a good fight or not or why it's happening or the fact that, you know, Leonard Ellerbe completely went back on his word. We're not going to work with these guys ever. Okay, maybe next fight. Okay, this fight. You know, like it's hilarious. It's just such an absurd sport, particularly to take a step back. But and you look at also just like the drug testing thing, to kind of touch back on that with Jesse, it's interesting that it just completely fails, but at the same time, running right along next to it is this other combat sport, MMA. But it's having a really banner year for drug testing. I mean, they've now got the first two EPO positive tests within almost as many weeks and almost as many UFCs. 174 yielded a new one, and 175, just a guy trying to be in it, Chael Sonnen, got popped. That's banner stuff. And, you know, they're figuring it out. And, like, you know, the NSAC's figuring it out. Like, this random testing, they're going to be catching people. And they've figured out the drug that's probably even more prevalent now that the TRT craze is dying down, which is EPO. It's fantastic. But it's just hilarious that these two things can run next to each other and people don't really get it. I mean, I see Kevin Ioli now coming around and calling for random testing. It's just kind of hilarious considering his track record. And
he's another guy that backtracks on what he says and stuff. I remember one time he told us, you know, you're beating a dead horse, you know, and I'm talking about Bieber, Kevin Ioli. And now it's almost a change of heart, but it's not completely. He's not really getting his feet wet or getting muddy when it comes to that. When it comes to the subject of PEDs and stuff, I remember when we had him on here on Leaving the Ring, he was kind of touchy and very defensive when we even tried to talk about Dana White. So it is what it is. We kind of see where his agenda is always and will always be at.
Well, I just kind of want he's an interesting guy. I mean, he's kind of explained the mechanics of how, you know, traffic, at least how he sees it or Yahoo sees it. It's very telling. Ever since then, I've just kind of looked at his work, and like, it's very telling what he does. I thought it was interesting, though, like Dan Raphael is another thing, about people not following through. I thought Dan wrote a great piece about just informing us about the lack of drug testing in the Gamboa fight with Terrence Crawford. And there was, like, no drug testing done whatsoever for that fight. I mean, here you had a high-risk guy in Gamboa, and nobody reached out. And that's the thing, too, is that people are pointing at what Nevada's doing, but they can only govern their state. There's 49 other commissions that aren't doing what Nevada's doing. And sure, the big cards go to them, but it's not really enough. And I still don't understand why Nevada keeps getting kind of pushed out. Like, I was watching a documentary, two of them actually, on Lance Armstrong. And the prevailing wisdom in that culture is that there should be a third party involved. That all they do is the testing. Like, you know, the UCI, like, you know, the cycling institution there, they can't really be in control of it because they're kind of making money off the sport, and it's not in their best interest to catch their top athletes. So like the Olympic Committee, you know, or JADCO that oversees Jamaica, you know, these countries don't really want to catch their top athletes. Nobody really wants the world's most stringent testing program. And so you need that third group. But then you also have to have commissioners that want to use that third group. They want to use it themselves and target certain guys and look like they're doing their job well, and they kind of are, but not really. If you threw, you know, a Tim Kennedy, an MMA analyst, said on Twitter, you know, like today or yesterday, he knows 50 guys that are dirty. That one, he should out all those people. You can't just say that and then get quiet again. But two, he's right.
Right.
You know, they should be throwing EPO at everybody. Boom, just throw that test at them. Bang, catch everybody.
Well, listen,
or,
I mean, here's a funny fact that, you know, the Gamboa and Crawford fight, there was no testing whatsoever. Crawford came on last week, talked a little bit about it. Immediately after that, well, not immediately, a couple of days after that, you have Memo Heredia saying, confirmed, on Twitter saying, it's confirmed, I'm going to work with Gamboa. Boom, you're going to see a change. Here's another guy that has been linked with drug testing, how to get by, you know, get away with drug testing, and yet none of his fighters have been tested. Nobody caught on to it. Nobody's talking about it. It's almost in the same case of Garcia. And that's another one of my, you know, everybody hates Mondays rants here. Is here you got Robert Garcia, who's a trainer, who's hired on Memo Heredia, had Alex Ariza. Now we're seeing Victor Conte with the snack product. Now Victor's not a strength conditioning coach, but he's sending product over there. I got to ask the question, guys. I mean, why isn't anybody asking the question? What is Robert Garcia Academy looking for? I mean, I understand you need an advantage. You need an advantage for your fighter, but, dude, they're looking for a major advantage for their fighters. To me, there's something fishy there. What is he fishing for? It's almost what Gamboa is doing. Gamboa is the bio. He went to the bio. His name got dropped on a list. Nobody attacked it except when I had the chance to talk to him about it, and he just kind of declined and went in hiatus. Talking about hiatus, he went on hiatus when I saw the question. Then Gable jumps on, questioned him about it, and said, oh, it's do you have any facts? We tweet out the article where his name is on. Nobody jumped on it. Now he lost to Crawford. There was no testing. He seeks out for somebody that's got a history. And guess what? There's nothing about it. Nobody's looking into it. The cheerleading of media boxing continues. It's great. Everybody hates Mondays. You want to call in 347-215-7598. I mean, come on, man. These are serious questions here. What is Robert Garcia looking for? What is he seeking? And what is Gamboa seeking for? And why do we keep giving Memo Heredia a pass? I don't get it. I thought everybody hates rats. Anyway,
well, I'm curious if Ariza was so good at what he does, why'd you get rid of him? You know, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. What was it that he was bringing to the table that is now he's not bringing to the table? I mean, Maidana did really well against Floyd. He almost won. It's not like his conditioning really failed him, I don't think. But maybe it is.
That's a good point.
No.
That's a good point.
Happened there? And people, it's not like they don't have access to him. Why is the rest of that story flushed out? You shouldn't take no for an answer. And there's a ton of
people.
The
people that have access for him, do they have more excuses for him, or they make the excuses for him, so the answer is never, the question is never answered.
Well, this is the thing I talk about, that maybe it's the way that I came up. I didn't come up traditionally in terms of, you know, I don't have a degree in journalism. I didn't start at a paper and kind of work my way towards my job. I just started writing, you know, op-ed pieces, and then I started going to the fights and writing based off that, talking to people, you know, doing interviews, writing based on that. And then I would just print the interviews, and then I would start developing relationships. People tell you things off the record, and your writing kind of goes from there. It fills in from there. But I'm not in that kind of box of, that's what I mean about taking the long view. Now that I'm kind of just on a hiatus and writing more long form, you're not chasing the interview. You're not chasing, well, shit, I don't have time to slow down and chase that one story down and chase it all the way to the end and find out what it is, because I got to write my breakdown for such and such fight and such and such fight. And then covering that press conference this week for a fight coming up next week, like you're on a rat race, you know, you're on that treadmill. And so people don't, it's easier. And most, it's not really that encouraged to go down the long form road, you know, and the long story. But like with Dan, like I praise Raphael for picking up that story. I didn't think of it. All I was thinking was that there was no other extra testing. There wasn't any testing at all. Dan picked it up. But where's the next article? And I think also when you find something bad like that, at least this is like for me, like when I once I realized what Angulo's situation was, for example, or mismatches. Although mismatches I kind of put away and I started going with PEDs because it was just breaking that way. But when you pick up and find something bad, it's now your responsibility, if you're the guy that noticed it, to keep pointing it out or to clean it up. You know, like I run to a really picturesque spot in San Francisco on a pretty regular basis, and I always bring my work gloves and like a trash bag, and I police the area. I pick up all the garbage. It's something I notice that takes away from how beautiful the area is, and so nobody else is going to do it. I do it. And I think more writers should have that kind of – that's how I deal with the work. It's like, Angulo, well, shit, nobody's going to write about this guy, so I better keep writing about this guy. You know, Kirkland was the same way, too. Well, he kind of turned the faucet off. So I think, you know, it's – I don't like to just complain and have no answers. I think this is great, though. You know, it's a really great way to open it up, Dave. Everybody does hate Mondays. Although these days for me, man, it's, you know, every day is almost kind of like a weekend that I get to decide what I want to do today. Just by killing the book. And I got a new video coming out on Jesse Vargas, actually, now that this is all kind of resolved. Good stuff.
You're looking to be on my Everybody Hates Mondays list right now, right here with this, you know.
With my rant? I'm sorry.
With your happiness here, you know. I'm trying to keep it in a very gloomy mood here, Mr. Dark Cloud. And you know what? There's sun rays kind of beaming through the cloud there. But, hey, you know.
The sun just came from behind the cloud, like into my living room. Like, it was pretty magical, Dave.
I can hear the hallelujahs right behind you. Hallelujah. Right? Speaking about writers here, I want to accept the award here at the WBAA. Oh, wait a minute. That's not us, because guess what? We actually do the work, and then there's other writers that are more recognizable that pick up the work that we've dished out and take the credit for. So that's another Everybody Hates Mondays. Guys that receive credit for work they really didn't do. We have those kind of guys. Everybody has those kind of guys at work. You know, you have that one employee that gets the gratitude or the pat on the back and says, hey, man, great work, when they knowingly know they didn't do any of the goddamn tedious things or the time to put in to get the credit. Mr. Tom Hauser, guess what, man? Pull in your sheet. You're full of shit. And I think a lot of us are getting tired of it. And there's a lot of other guys like Dan Raphael getting kind of tired of it. Yes, we know that you guys are in a bigger, you know, platform or forum of boxing. But come on, let's be real here. You didn't do the work. You didn't put in the work. Basically, what you did is you cut and paste. You cut and paste Gabriel Montoya's. You cut and paste Brian Fogg. And now you're going to get another award for it. Hey, good for you, man. Hope you can sleep at night. But I'm glad that a lot of boxing fans and listeners of Leaving the Ring were able to recognize it and send us tons of emails saying, wow, it was almost reading a replica of what you guys have been dishing out and talking about. Not only did he steal from Brian Fogg, he stole from Steve Kim off of his Twitter. You know, Steve throws out a lot of information. Doesn't necessarily put it on articles, but you can compile a lot of the things that he throws out in tweets, and you can make it into an article. So good for you, Mr. Hauser, that you're keeping up with. And you know what? For an older guy, he's keeping up with the social media. He actually knows how to use the social media a lot better than a lot of these younger guys that are using it, that like to put up fake accounts with fake little avatars that don't know how to use the Twitter, Facebook, or anything else. At least Hauser knows how to use it and make it work for him. So anyways, that's my end of Everybody Hates Mondays. We got a good fight card coming up this Saturday. Here, Canelo Alvarez facing Arizlani Lara, which is a really good test. I think De La Hoya was putting it up perfect in his press conference. What was he saying, Gabriel? What was the saying he kept repeating himself over and over and over? I copied the UFC model.
it was a trip. You know, I think Oscar's, it's kind of trippy. This so much happens. I got in trouble for making fun of him the last time. I'll say this, he's gotten a lot better. You know, he's learning how to, and I'm a victim of the as well. You know, I do it a lot on this show. But it seemed to me that, like, this is the first time he's really been out there for major pay-per-view, and it's him now. And he realizes it. And, you know, he's got somebody else writing the scripts, or, you know, maybe it's the same person. I don't know. It's the scripts aren't bad, you know. But for me, like, whenever Oscar's at his best, and he actually can be a really good public speaker, and he's a great interview. When you know how to talk with him and get him relaxed, he's actually really funny, good storyteller, and pretty self-deprecating and engaging. Today, he was a little stiff, you know. He was kind of like trying to stay on the script, and that's actually the first time I got banned. Was I made that comment of, like, you know, I made some comment about, I think the amount of us he said it was like a drinking game. If it was a drinking game, we'd all be hammered by now. Like, the press conference had just started.
But
it was just kind of ruthless. But, you know, I've done, you know, a lot of stage readings or a lot of just cold readings off the script, and it's not easy. You got to be really familiar with it. He's gotten better at it, but I still think Oscar off the cuff is going to be a better promotional figure than Oscar on the script, unless he, like, really memorizes and, like, practices it. Like, Don King had that gift of gab. I think, like I said, you see Oscar at the post-fight press conference when he doesn't, you know, just saw the fight that it's fresh and you kind of saw that energy. He's always better at those than he is, like, when he was today. But if you want to get down to the fights, let's just start bringing it down. This is the Lara Canella preview.
Before you even get into that, you know, I'll just let everybody know, around 6:45, we're going to have Antonio Diaz, ex-fighter, now turning into a trainer, and the brother of Joel Diaz. He's going to be coming on Leave and Ring about 6:45. But, talk about boxing coming at charge. You know, we had some fights on Fox Sports 1 from Golden Boy yesterday. We're having it today by Mike Tyson Promotions here tonight. And tomorrow we have ESPN. Then we have the big pay-per-view between Canelo and Laura. You know what? Speaking about Oscar real quick, before I even get into the Canelo and Laura card here, is, you know, right now, like I said, speaking to people, they say, well, you know what, I don't think they're going to survive. I don't think Oscar's smart enough to make the right choices. He's always had people that are in business minded. They're able to kind of maneuver or do the right thing business-wise for him. But here, listen to this. I'm not really sure if this was Oscar's choice or if this was somebody else advising Oscar, but I remember a lot of folks were asking me, what happened to Solo Boxeo? Golden Boy was on Solo Boxeo, and then all of a sudden, it just kind of disappeared. They ended up on Fox Sports. Everybody thought that Golden Boy was going to be on Solo Boxeo, which is on Telemundo, and Fox Sports 1. Well, here was the thing. This is what I've been told. Now, like I said, I'm not sure if it's Oscar's decision or if Oscar caught on, but there's other things Oscar caught on, and this is why the whole Golden Boy Civil War happened. But here's one thing that I thought that was a smart move. Now, this kind of tells me whether or not, if it was his decision, he's on the right track. Telefuturo. Telefuturo had Solo Boxeo. Well, they used to pay Golden Boy to have boxing cards. They decided, we're not going to do that anymore. What we're going to do is we're going to charge the promotional company, which is Golden Boy, to present these fight cards on their telecast. Golden Boy didn't think it was a good move. They decided to decline to re-up their contract and said, no, we're going to go with somebody else. Now, that's when Fox Sports came along and said, hey, we'll pay you guys to have fight cards on our network. That's why they jumped ship. Top Rank decided to take on Solo Boxeo, and that's why you see Top Rank fights on Solo Boxeo there. So I'm not sure if it's going to be the demise of Golden Boy if they're going to be making good decisions like that. Anyway, so that's where we're at with that there. I mean, hopefully I answered some of those questions there that I've been getting on email here on Leaving the Ring Radio. But let's go into this fight card, man. And I like to talk about Gomez's win a little later, and even Diego de la Hoya, and with Joseph Diaz Jr. that was on last night. But this Saturday's pay-per-view card here, Gabriel, which I think is a really good card, to tell you the truth.
No, I like it. It's interesting. I mean, it's not the most scintillating undercard on the planet. But I'm just pulling it up now. You've got Canelo Alvarez versus Arisandi Lara. I mean, that's really, it's the fight that, like, it was like Blogger's Delight. It's what everybody wants. It's what the purists like. It's a, you know, a guy in Alvarez who's not really a junior middleweight anymore. I think it's kind of a strange fight for him, and maybe a little bit late in his time as a junior middleweight. But it's the fight that the Arisandi Lara's always wanted. And I kind of wonder about him. I mean, he's a guy that If he got mauled by Carlos Molina in a fight a lot of people thought he lost. He got mauled again and dropped for the first time in his career against Angulo in a fight that nobody gave Angulo a chance in, well, except for me. But then he comes back and he wins, and nobody really gives him credit for that. They just go crazy about, you know, the fact that he got roughed up. But he showed his toughness, you know. But he's kind of like a Casamayor type of guy, where sometimes he's going to be really difficult because of his experience, his class, his skills. But he may not be able to get you out of there, and so he's willing to find some kind of a other way that may not be very entertaining in order to win. He'll also use kind of dirty tricks, all that, you know, kind of Cuban school of boxing that everybody's talking about. I don't think there's real animosity there, but there's certainly a both guys understand who they are. They're kind of avatars for their companies right now. You know, Canelo needs to win in order to continue being a franchise or grow into one. He's got that one loss, but, like, you know, next time he loses to a quality guy who could box a little bit, everybody's going to realize, maybe this kid's kind of slow. I mean, who cares that he looks white and is redheaded but is Spanish? That novelty doesn't work if you don't win. And if you can't win at the top level, well, then you're just kind of, you know, menudo. You weren't really, like, a real deal. So this is a big fight for him, and it's a big fight for Oscar, who's stepping in. You know, no wonder he's probably, you know, nervous. This is a huge fight for his company. His company won't crumble, but he'll do a lot better if Canelo wins. And there's more, you know, security in Canelo winning. Tomorrow,
Golden Boy's,
you know,
right back in the position. I got to tell you this. Golden Boy's right back in a time machine, and meaning what I'm talking about is when Oscar had to sign a certain amount of deals with HBO when the promotional company was taken off ground, they needed Oscar to continue to fight, continue to put his name and his face on pay-per-view fights, because that was the only way that promotional company was going to gain any type of momentum, any speed to survive in the game of promotions. Now, they're right back in that seat with Canelo. They really need Canelo to win this fight. They really need that, because it's going to make it far more easier to keep their name fresh and right there to continue to get some major, major dates for their promotional company. There's nobody out there right now in terms of that's ready up and ready to be served as the next star or potential star for Golden Boy. So Canelo right now is that betting gamble that Golden Boy is hoping they don't crap out on.
I remember hearing before Pacquiao De La Hoya, which is really the ultimate sacrifice, is what that fight should have been called. You know,
right.
They were, it was really like, you know, win or go home, you know. And they were thinking, you know, like that, you know, Golden Boy were thinking that this is it. You know, I think Hopkins had just taken out Pavlik, right? So there was one franchise. And I think that it was Hopkins that had said, like, he was going to, you know, be the death of Bob Arum, you know, or something like that. Give him a heart attack or something. And or make him watch him do the speed bag while he was naked. I can't remember. But they were hoping that, you know, De La Hoya would basically just eviscerate Pacquiao, catch him with that vaunted left hook, knock him out, and boom, the 1-2 punch, Golden Boy would be at the top of the, you know, top of the heap, and Top Rank would be in tatters. And we, you know, we went the other way, and De La Hoya didn't just lose, he got beaten into retirement. And that image, I was actually just looking at it today, of De La Hoya on the stool between rounds, just looking like, it's like he's looking back on his life and going, well, how did I get here, you know? He's kind
he
of
that Lord look
like that. Yeah,
he had the Lord look.
He's got that moment. The what?
Yeah. He has the Lord look. I mean, like right now, you said there's no animosity really that you believe that Lord has with Canelo, you know? And I think it's because he's still in shock that Canelo took on this fight, like most of us. I'm still in shock that Canelo took on this fight. This is a big step up. I'm actually, I hate to say this, but Canelo's kind of made me a bit of a fan for him to take on a fight that's so risky right now in his career. I mean, look, Canelo is a guy that has to have his momentum. He's a guy that has to take the lead in the dance. I was telling Brian Frog just the other day, this could be potentially a very boring fight, Gabriel. Two counterpunchers, two guys that need somebody to lead. This could be all over again. Floyd Mayweather versus Marquez, just the poor man's version of it. You know, it's really going to depend on whether or not who decides to go after who. Laura, we've seen Laura in an exciting fight, and that was really because of Angulo. Angulo's style, coming forward, trying to knock him out. Canelo doesn't do any of that. He just doesn't have that in him. He needs a guy that needs to come to him so he can counterpunch him and he can let his hands go. I'm not sure if Laura's the guy that's going to do that. This is going to be a very dictating type of fight in terms of who decides to take the lead, who takes the initiative. But here's the sad part about it. If Laura doesn't decide to say, you know what, let me just go for it, let me throw more than just 10, 15 punches per round, there's a strong possibility, even if he lands the harder shots or the cleaner shots, he may not get that win. Why? Because when you don't put or stack up the amount of punches to be remembered by the end of the round or the end of the fight, it's not going to sway your way. I have a big problem with that. And for that, I'll tell you my pick right now. I got Canelo. I think Canelo is going to take the win. Laura needs to wake up and understand your style works. It's just like a puncher's. It's like a brawler. Their style works when you have the right person in front of you. But when you don't, you got to turn it up. Oh, God, I'm using that word. You got to do something different. You got to do something different. Something that's out of norm, out of character. Laura's got to do something out of character because I don't see Canelo trying to go for it. I think Canelo understands the legacy. I think Canelo understands the risk. Another loss under his belt, it can kind of put him into the abyss of the who's could have made it but just couldn't quite get there. It's really going to really just rely on Laura. I don't know if he can do it. So I go with Canelo.
I'm going Laura. I just figure, you know, he is a bit like Casemiro like that. Like, and Pernell Whitaker was like this to a certain extent. You know, guys that are defensive masters, and they feel like, you know, maybe it's the southpaw thing too. It's like they know they're tricky and they're hard to deal with, and they also have these other tools and they can tie you up and tangle you all up. And so they feel like they're in control of the fight and that they should be considered like they're winning, even though maybe their offense is few and far between. And that's going to be the danger for Laura. But this could look very much like Mayweather-Canelo, where he's trying to box with this guy, and he's not getting off first. And the other guy's quick on the draw, lands a couple shots, gets out of the way, and he's resetting all night long. I think that Laura can learn a lot and can employ a lot from watching the Mayweather fight. And whereas I think, you know, Canelo can look at the Angulo fight all he wants, and maybe he can, you know, use that left hook when Laura tries to escape out to the right, but I still think that he's going to have trouble dealing with Laura with that speed. I mean, maybe he can back him up to the ropes. I mean, that's the one thing I'll say is that Laura does allow himself to get pushed to the ropes and mauled. If Canelo can get him there and keep him there, then yeah, I mean, he's probably going to rough him up, but I think Laura's going to fight the fight of his life. You see one guy a little stoic. I mean, he is Canelo, so he's always kind of stoic. But he's trying to say, you know, the weight's not a problem. I just see Laura. He's got that kind of glow about him, that smile. He's itching for this. He feels confident. You know, you see a guy glowing like that at the final press conference, I just lean towards him. I just feel like it's his moment. Will they give it to him? I don't know. You know, Jerry Ross is a guy. He gave Trinidad the win over De La Hoya. And feels very vehement in it. And I think what he likes is the harder blows. And I think he'll be scoring probably more towards Canelo. Dave Moretti is a guy that scored, you know, for the Mayweather fight with Canelo, and he was like two rounds away from having it a draw. So, you know, I didn't give Canelo that many rounds in the fight. So, things are probably going to come down to Levi Martinez, the third judge. I think he'll be the deciding factor. But I like Laura. I like him by, you know, majority decision. I think it's going to be close, but I think he pulls it out. I think Al Haymon, you know, the fact that, you know, when the fight was made, you could argue that this was, you know, Schaefer didn't really like Laura. Putting him in there with Canelo, he was a big believer in Canelo, and they're trying to keep that franchise going and maybe steal it. But now that Schaefer's out and all bets are off, and then all these other machinations are now put in place, the judges and things, the ref, what's the fight like now? That's, I think, the question. Who can win that decision? It's going to be a really good fight. I think it's going to be a tight fight. I think a fight's going to break out, though, like late in the fight.
I tell you what, you're gonna see a little bit more of what's kind of being geared up in this fight card. You got Wama Lopez, who had a sensational KO on the rematch against Ponce de Leon. He's going to be getting Francisco Vargas, which is a very, very tough fight. It's a good opening for Vargas to see where he stands at. And Wama's just got that stubbornness called a punch that keeps him in the fight game. Abner Morris is back in the mix. He's going to be debuting from his loss from Johnny Gonzalez. Now, I don't know about you. But I'm going to be calling in about – I'm going to be calling Antonio Diaz right now. But here's a thought. Can anybody think of – do you think there's a strong possibility? The reason why Morris and Lopez are on the same card, because if they are both successful, there's a strong possibility we might end up seeing Morris versus Lopez. Gabriel?
Oh, Jesus. Yes, I think that's a very solid call. It's a good fight, actually. But do you want to put Morris in with a big puncher so fast? I don't know. You know, this fight is very curious to me. I want to know what Morris is like. Is his confidence back all the way? Is he mentally back in the game? Is Virgil Hunter, you know, what is he going to say to him, or rather whisper to him during the fight? Like, has he gotten his confidence back? You know, I don't know. There's a lot of questions here around this, and I'm curious about his condition. I'm curious about, you know, what – just a lot of things with Abner Morris. But I doubt that Oquendo is going to be the guy to really pull it out of him. I mean, this is a confidence builder.
No, this is a confidence boost for him. If anything, the Lopez fight with Vargas, that's actually a real fight. Just like with the Mauricio Herrera fight, he's actually getting into a real fight. This you know, it's a good card. It's a decent card, and I think you're going to get your money's worth from it, you know. I think the thought is that Morris is going to get by and what he needs to do for that confident buildup. It's really in question whether or not Lopez can get past because Lopez not that long ago was looked at as a guy that's washed up, ready to go, and shouldn't be back into the ring. But he got himself back in with that stubborn punch of himself, and now he's back into that mix. So, I don't know. I'm going to be trying to call in Antonio Diaz right now, so give me a minute here, Gable.
Okay. Talk a little bit about last night's action. Probably the fight of the night, you know, it was the Golden Boy Live card. Alfonso Gomez, Ed Paredes with the main events. But Joseph Diaz Jr., man, he's out of SoCal, and Ramiro Robles. They got it on, and it was
Antonio, I'm going to pass you right now. Okay, bro?
Okay. Okay, never mind.
Okay, Gabriel, are you there? I'm going to be patching in Antonio Diaz. Antonio, you there, brother?
I'm here.
Hey, man. Hey, thanks for taking the time to talk to us here on Leaving the Ring Radio, man. It's really – I've been looking forward to it. I asked Ernesto if I can get you on, and it's been a while, actually. I've been wanting an interview. So, hey, thanks for, doing it on such a short notice, man. I really appreciate it.
No problem, man, anytime.
So, you know what, I want to talk to you a little bit about your career, and I know you've taken a change in your career. You're still, you know, you're a retired fighter, but you're really not retired. You're back in the mix as a trainer. But before I even start getting into the fact that now you're a trainer, I want to go into about your career, man, and the start of it. You know, when you were at your ultra peak, right, you know, when so many people were writing about you and you were going at that next step, How hard and how distracting do you think, or the pressure of being the it factor in when you were at your peak, to be the guy that was supposed to make things happen for yourself? I mean, was that a burden, or was that just something that you just kind of rolled with?
You know, there's something I just kind of moan with. You know, I just went with it. I mean, it was pressure. There was a lot of pressure because here in the Valley, I mean, we had a couple boxers that made it to a certain level, which was like, you know, Pancho Segura. You know, he made a little, you know, pretty decent level. Then my brother Joel Diaz made it a little further. But after that, I mean, I was the one who really made a name for the whole Valley down here because, you know, I fought big fights, big fighters on big networks. You know, so it was a lot of pressure. I mean, it was also a great feeling. Well,
now, when you were going, you were steamrolling through guys. You were going on a great streak. When did things change for you? I mean, because you decided to jump up and weight, became a welterweight. You decided to go after the guy that just beat Oscar De La Hoya. That was that by choice, dude, or was that by pressure from the promoters, your management, or just the overall people surrounding you that wanted to see you go to the next level and chase after the bigger money?
You know what? I think that was a move that was done by my former manager back then. I was promoted by Top Rank. I was managed by Cameron Duncan. And you know what? I mean, I really think that they really did me dirty right there because I just beat Mickey Ward. And
right
after I beat Mickey Ward, you know, at that time, I was looking for a fight with Costa Zu. Costa Zu was like the man I really wanted to fight because I knew his style and my style was made for each other. You know, his style was made for a good fight against me. So back then, I was looking for that Costa Zu fight. So right after the Mickey Ward fight, you know, Cameron Duncan comes and tells me and my former trainer, Lee Espinoza, hey, man, good job. You know, your life has just changed. Get ready for a different life. I'm like, oh, fuck, all right, that's good. But then we come back, and they call us to meet in Top Rank. I go to the office, and they tell us there's two offers for you. There's two opportunities for you for the WBC, both of them. I was like, okay, so what's the offer? You know, well, there's one offer to fight Shane Mosley in New York. You know, they're paying you so much money. You know, for the WBC.
Right.
And I was like, oh, okay. It was a pretty big number of money, you know. I was like, oh, yeah, well, that's a pretty good number. But I'm at 140. You know, I want to fight at 140. So he goes, well, there's also a title shot for you against Costa Zu for $50,000. I was like, you're going to go for half a... half a mil to 50,000 for the same title. And then, now I remember he told me, why don't we do this? Let's go to 147. Let's try it there. Let's fight this fight. Let's get this money. And if everything goes well, we'll continue. If things don't go well, we'll just say, you know what, this is our weight class. We're going back down to 140, and we'll get the Costa Zu fight again. We'll look for that Costa Zu fight. I was like, all right, perfect. Sounds good. So we went ahead. We did what we did. We fought. After the fight, threw me to the gooder. Like, you lost, you're out. I was like, you serious? Like, son of a gun, you know? But, and from there on,
this was Cameron Duncan that made that offer to you?
Yeah. Yes.
So it was basically, they just funneled you towards where they wanted you to go.
But, I mean, yeah, what? Because, they told me, you know, Cameron told me, let's go for the Shane Mosley fight. Let's pick up this $500,000. We'll see what we do there. If things don't come out well, we'll come back down to 140, and we'll just say that was in our weight class, and we'll look for a Costa Zu fight. I said, perfect, let's do it. So we fought. Things didn't come out well. I came back, and we will call him, no more answering. Before the fight, we will call him, he would answer right away. After that, it was hard to get a hold of him. We even had to be driving to Vegas to look for him. And it was hard to get a hold of, you know. And then finally they gave me four little fights, you know, in Univision, small network TV. And then again, all of a sudden, you know, I mean, they had nothing scheduled for me, and they tell me, oh, you have nothing scheduled for you right now. This is and that. So that's when I got married. After I got married, I come back from my honeymoon. They tell me, oh, we got your world title fight against Margarito. in a month and a half. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, but, right.
You know, it was tough. You know, I think the hardest part of my career was dealing with all the outside things about boxing, all the negotiation stuff.
So let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, Antonio. I mean, obviously, this sport has no mercy. There's no remorse in it. There's nobody that has a conscience in the sport. But you're right back into it. I mean, you could have decided to go off and do something completely different. And really quick, so if people are just tuning in, we got Antonio Diaz with us, and who's also the brother of Julio and Joel Diaz. So let me go back to my question. Why did you opt to go return to this sport, but in a different position? Now you're a trainer. Why did you decide to do that?
You know what? I love the sport of boxing. I love it, you know, and I like to step up to challenges. And, you know, this is a challenge that was when I stopped I didn't stop boxing. I didn't retire. I took 3 years off. When I took my time off, somebody from the Boys and Girls Club called me and said, are you willing to run a boxing club at the Boys and Girls Club? We were opening up a boxing club and we're looking for somebody to run it. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to retire boxing. What can I do, you know, after boxing besides, you know, other things? Because right now in the Valley, there's not much you can do. And I was like, you know what? I stood up to the challenge, and then I've been in the Boys and Girls Club for 10 years already. I've been training kids, and you know what? I like it. I love it. You know, I love training kids. I like making these, you know, I like taking the kids out to competition. You know, I like it when they win. You know, I like it when there's a great feeling when you're up there and they see your fighters compete and come out victorious, and then people come and tell you, man, your boxers are great. They're beautiful boxers that you guys can fight. I think that's the most important thing that I like, when people come and tell you that you're doing good at what you like.
How much of an impact do you think Joel has done for you guys, man? I mean, I know you guys are a tight-knit, you know, a family. You guys, you know, as brothers, you guys kind of stick together. You guys are always with each other no matter what. I see you guys all together at the fights. But is he the grounding part of you guys, or are all you guys together give each other advice in what direction you guys should go in doing things in the sport of boxing?
You know what? I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, we all get together. We all talk to each other. We all give advice to each other. We're a very close family. We're very tight. We're very close. When it comes down to anything, I mean, we're all there to help each other out. The whole family, not just the brothers, my mom, dad, brothers, sisters, we're all a good close family. Even with our friends, we always stick together and help out our friends, whoever needs our help. But Joel is like the main guy that started everything, you know. He started everything. He's the one who started the boxing. We followed his footsteps. Then after he retired, he helped train. He helped Elias Pinoza train myself and my brother Julio. He was the one that used to train us back then. After Lee, on the guidance of Elias Pinoza, he's the one who did all the training with us, all the hard work. And now that he got Tim Bradley, he started working with Tim Bradley, he brought Tim Bradley to world title, to world champion, to being a four-time world champion. Well, that's a different,
right,
different draw deal we want to follow also, you know. So now, I have kids that I've been working with since they were 8, 9, 10 years old, and right now these kids are ranked number 2 in the United States. You know, number 1 and number 2. They got great talent. They got great future. They're going to be great, great world champions when they get older, if they stick to the sport.
So my family's actually from Coachella Valley, and my dad was born in Cathedral City. My folks live in Palm Desert. I got family all through the valley there. I'm just curious for you, like, what is it about the desert? And they're all so proud of being from there. You know, my dad's lived other places, but that's where he's chosen to retire and live out his days. What is it about the desert that draws you guys there and that there's such pride in that community, among obviously among your gym, but just in general, the people there.
You know what? I think it's just the way of living here. You know, the way you live here is nice. It's relaxing. You can get up in the morning and go take a jog, and there's not much traffic, not much crazy stuff going on. You know, everything's more the people here are more close together. You know, almost everybody knows everybody around here. You know, I think that's what it is. You know, even though the hardest part here about living here in the desert is these couple months. You know, June, July, and August.
Right.
Like right now, it's
right,
115 degrees right now. It's super hot.
Oh, shit.
But we understand. Months. We're in the AC and we're good. You know, but after that, the rest of the year, dude, it's the weather is beautiful. The scenery, the golf courses, everything is just great. You know, it's just, I think that's what keeps us here. You know, other people that live like in the LA areas, I mean, they got all this traffic they got to deal with. You know, right here, I live 5 miles away from the gym. You know, I'm there in 6, 7, 8 minutes. I mean, people in Los Angeles, they live 3 miles away from the work, and they're there in half an hour.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, and also there's other areas like up there, up in the north or over in the east coast, there's times they can't even go out because of the snow blizzards and, you know, all that crazy weather, tornadoes and hurricanes. And right here, everything's nice and calm. You know, right here, just the heat. We just got to deal with the heat. You know, our body gets used to it, no problem. The only thing here is just all the earthquakes, but, you know, not bad.
I like the desert. I got married out there. It's Idlewild right there too. If you want to hit the mountains, there's something about it out there.
As a matter of fact, we were just in Idlewild this weekend. We went away from the heat. It was beautiful. We went with the family. We picnicked up there, and it was nice. You know, it's not that far. Everything's close by here.
Yeah, nothing beats the desert. Sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah, I played golf out there. It was great. I mean, it's beautiful out there, you know. Let me ask you this, Antonio. With the success with Joel, and there's got to be still some competitive between you guys as brothers, you know. I mean, I got my older brother and my younger brothers, and we compete with each other. It's not a bad competency, but we're still competitive. I mean, what part do you think that you got to do a bit better with that, what your brother's doing right now, do you think?
Okay. One thing that I said, and like you said, exactly, we're also competitive. Every brother, person out there is competitive. My brother has his own boxing gym. Well, we are one organization, the Boys and Girls Club of Coachella Valley. The Boys and Girls Club has five Boys and Girls Clubs here in the Valley that we work with. But only two Boys and Girls Clubs have boxing clubs, which is my boxing club that I started 10 years ago, and then they just opened one up in Mecca where my brother Joel, that's where my brother Joel runs. My brother Joel and my brother Jesus, we call him Shaggy, they run the one in Mecca. Myself and my brother Julio, we run the one in Indio. The one in Mecca has been open for 2 years, and every time there's competitions or anything, we always try to compete against each other.
they come down,
they bring their boys over here for sparring, and there's always a competition. Now, somebody told me one time that what would I do to pass my brother's success, and what's my goal, what do I want to do? Somebody told me, you know what, it's going to be hard for you to pass your brother's success, because to bring Ken Bradley, being the best fighter in the world, winning 4 world titles, it's going to be tough. But what I said is my goal, my biggest goal is to get an Olympian. I think that'll overcome anybody. Because remember, in professional boxing, they can make a world champion at any time. I'm not saying Tim Bradley was made a world champion at any time. Because Tim Bradley, let me tell you, Bradley, he became a world champion because of him. Because every time Bradley was every fight he fought, he was supposed to lose. But he was always in top shape, and he always became, you know, he always came up ahead of everything. He works hard. He earned his world titles. But to win an Olympic, to make it to the Olympics, or place the Olympics or win a medal, it's hard. It's super hard to make it to the Olympics because you got to fight so many fights, so many qualifiers, so many duels, so many this, so many that. It's hard.
And the politics of it.
Of amateur boxing. Amateur boxing has a lot of politics.
Right.
You know? And just to make it to the Olympics, that's one of my goals, to get one of my kids in there. And I think I'll be happy.
What is one of the greatest moments for yourself and as a professional fighter? What was one of the greatest moments, do you think, that stands out and it's one of the stories that you tell the kids at the Boys and Girls Club that makes you smile and you think that it's a good thing for them to hear that's coming from you?
I think one of them is when I was younger, nobody thought what I became. Everybody thought I was going to be a nobody. And I was able to become successful in the sport. When I was young, I tell the same story all the time. I tell the story all the time to some of the kids. Like when I was young, I was small, I was fat, I was fighting. Every time we went to competition, Lee Espinoza would take us to competition. He would take 5-6 kids. Everybody would win except me. I was like the losing guy. Loser of the team. Quick story. One time, there was a guy that came from Utah to the Valley. He was training. He was boxing. His name was Tony West. He organized a tournament, a little boxing show, California versus Utah. So I kind of overheard them talking about it. So me and a buddy of mine, we were training by ourselves at, hey man, at Utah. I was like 14, 15 years old. So we're training, we're running, we're training, we're sparring, we're doing everything. So then the day before they were going to leave, I remember Lee Espinoza talking to my brother Julio, who was a top amateur at the time, my brother Shaggy, who was one of the top amateurs, and a couple other guys that he had. He was taking 5 of them. So I heard them telling him, hey, tomorrow I'll be ready at 5 in the morning. We're going to pick you up. We're going to drive, blah, blah, blah. So I went up to Lee Espinoza and told him, hey, Lee, so where are you going tomorrow? Oh, we're going to Utah. I go, hey, can we go, me and my buddy Alfonso? He goes, oh, no. You guys haven't even been training. You guys are not even ready. Oh, we've been training. I go, I've been training. We've been sparring. We've been running. Are you sure? He goes, yeah. How much you weigh? I go, I'm 119. He checks my weight. Oh, perfect. You're okay. You know what he said?
Huh.
He said, this is what he said. He looked at his other buddy, at Tony West, the guy who organized. He goes, you know what? We should take these two Chuzmas. Chuzmas means the no good guy. We should take these two Chuzmas to have at least two losers. We can't go over there and have all. We can't have at least two losers. All right. I didn't care. I said, I'm going to go to Utah. We're going to drive over there. It'll be fun. We're going to go to Vegas and drive to Utah. Perfect. No problem. We left. We get over there, we rest, we go to the weigh-in, they make the fight, we all get a fight. Fight night comes, the first guy, we have a little cousin by his name, Jose Vargas, we used to call him Chiquita, because he used to fight like Chiquita Gonzalez. He fights, he loses. He lost. Then the second one, another kid by the name of Chris Hernandez, he fights, he loses.
Wow.
The next one, Pedro Ochoa, he loses. These are the 5 superstars that are going to go to win.
Right.
He loses. My brother Julio goes in, he wins. My brother Shaggy, who's going to fight the Golden Glove champion from over there, he's doing good. He gets tired. He gets disqualified for getting the guy in the low blows, for giving the guy a low blows. He got disqualified. So all the top 5 guys, they lose. I go in there, I stop the guy in the second round.
Damn
my
it.
Buddy goes in and stops the guy in the first round. When we're coming back,
that's awesome.
Lee was like, oh, wow, man. I'm glad we bought these two Chuzmas. He was still going to Chuzmas. I'm glad we bought these two Chuzmas. We were looking like, shit. You know, we lost everybody except these two Chuzmas and Julio. And after that, he started paying more attention to me, and I started working harder. I made it to the 92 New York Nationals, and then I made it to the 95 Golden Glove Nationals. I won tournaments back and forth, back to back all the time. I was winning. I was on the streak. I was on a winning streak. And that's the story I told the kids. You know,
that's a great story, bro.
I gotta tell you, the reason too,
I think it's hilarious because I know Lee. I know Lee really good, you know, and he's got that face. You mimic him perfect the way he talks, and he's got the big Indian nose. I can just picture him looking at you, telling you that.
Yeah,
take the juice.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple
losers. Yep.
Wow.
Take the juice. We need at least two losers. That was work. And he'll tell you. I mean, he'll tell you.
Wow.
We always laugh at that because I always tell him. I
always
remind him about that.
That's great. Was it that he doubted you, or was it that you were tired of losing and you had already prepared for that moment?
I don't know what it was. It was just that I guess I'm very tired of losing. I have been losing all the time. I would lose all the time and I've been called the loser. So when they said they were going to go to Utah, I was like, you know what, I might want to go. So my buddy and I, we just got together. We were working out together. We were sparring. We were putting our own gloves, sparring against each other. We were running around the park, and we were just ready. And when fight day came, I just wanted to prove them wrong.
Wow, that's a great story. That is a great story, man. Well, Antonio, I want to thank you again, bro, for coming on, man. We got to have you back
on Leave the Ring Radio,
brother. You take care, man.
You got my number, and anytime, just give me a call. And, you know, I'm more than happy to talk to you guys.
Absolutely. Antonio Diaz here on Leaving the Ring Radio, man. If you didn't catch the interview, you'll catch it on the archive. Antonio Diaz, thank you again, brother, for coming on Leaving the Ring Radio, bro. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, brother. See you. All right, thank you, bye.
Take care.
That was a great story, man. I mean, you got to love the story. And you know what? It's amazing. He answered the question about when he got in with Sugar Shane Mosley. I mean, I remember this was a last minute interview, folks. And I had called Gabriel and I said, listen, I want to have Antonio Diaz on. I mean, there's no purpose to have him on, but I have two burning questions I've been wanting to ask this guy. I never had the opportunity to ask him. And one of them was about the Shane Mosley fight. Cause I really felt that it was kind of weird that he automatically got that Shane Mosley fight and what he thought about it. And boom, we kind of got the answer that we kind of suspected. Gabriel, remember we were talking about that, you know, it was like,
it's
kind of fishy.
Yeah. We were like, why did that fight happen? I'm curious to see what Cameron Duncan would say about that. But that's, you know, it's the classic, it's just such a boxing move. It's like when you don't want to, you know, you're obligated to say something and act a certain way, but you don't want to do it. So you tell the other guy, hey, I'm going to ask you something, and I need you to say no. Just say no, all right, to whatever I say. Like, okay, cool.
Right, yeah.
And then you say something to him that you're obligated to say it, and then the guy says no, and you're like, cool, now I can say that I asked. And to me, like a manager walking up to a guy with two proposals, one's for $500,000, one's for $50,000, one's a winnable fight that you want for $50,000, and the other one is a $500,000 fight that you know you're probably not going to win. Like, what the hell? You know, the manager, in this case, I guess it would be Cameron Duncan, has been kind of accused by his ex-client of serving the needs of the promoter as opposed to his client.
I honestly, the way I'm looking at it is it's almost like he's being accused of fixing a match here, you know?
Well, it's a gamble.
It's a gamble.
They're shaded. Yeah, they're shaded. You know, you put a guy in
right
with his style against a guy that's bigger, you know, a knockout puncher. And that was a tough fight. You know, Antonio took a lot of punishment. You know, to me, it wasn't like he got blown out. It was like he just was not 147-pounder, and his conditioning kept him, you know, up. But, I mean, you know, Mosley was a monster at that period of time, and that's a fight, you know. It's in that era. It's in that dark era. We talk about, you know, the steroid era. That we're kind of in a different phase than we think we are. You know, that rash of positives in spring of 2012, that wasn't like, oh, my God, people have started using drugs. It was like a sign of the past. And it was just kind of rearing its ugly head. It was a sign that the test had finally caught up. But the drugs had been there for a long time.
Right.
And you look at that fight, you know, what year was that? I'm looking it up as we speak. That was 2000, November 2000. That fight happened in New York. So, you know, they have the 6-to-1 TE ratio over there. But they damn sure didn't have any EPO testing. You know, they certainly weren't doing CIR back in 2000. Maybe it wasn't even created until the next year. And Nevada at this point wasn't even testing for performance-enhancing drugs. And they are the beacon towards where everybody looks. So what was going on in New York in Madison Square Garden? And this is also, you know, one fight after, if I'm not mistaken, this is one fight after the Oscar De La Hoya win at the Staples Center. But this is before 2003 when Shane Mosley goes to Balco. And apparently, you know, all the people I've talked to, he only went to
right.
Balco for one fight. But who knows what he was doing when he made that jump to welterweight. You know, I mean, it's – I know that maybe some people think that's unfair, but you don't just land and –
Well, here's that – this is what's not unfair. This is what's not unfair. The reason why we know a little bit more what's going on is because, you know, what comes good from the internet also comes bad. For instance, when I was talking about Robert Diaz, what is he fishing for? You imagine if the internet was around, we would have been
Garcia.
Able to ask that. Yeah, I mean, Garcia, you know, what is he fishing for? You imagine if the internet was around with Mosley, we would really honestly be asking those very same questions. What is Mosley fishing for? And
well,
there was nobody there to ask
like,
the question.
Like, if you look at look at Robert Garcia and you say, Conte is like the third guy, right, that he goes to. When you look at who went to Conte, ultimately, they had, I don't know about Barry Bonds, but certainly the other clients had gone to Memo Heredia before that, at least some of them, Marion Jones,
right.
I believe Tim Montgomery. So, you know, you don't end up with like the best guy with the latest stuff unless you've been other places before. So looking at Shane Mosley, I mean, you're looking for EPO and you're looking for, you know, the cream or the latest, you know, stuff to repair yourself. You're a professional at that point. You know, Lance Armstrong, he didn't just have a guy that helped him dope. He had, like, the foremost expert in blood doping, you know, Dr. Michele Ferrari. So, you know, again, you trace back, you wonder what was going on in the 2000s. The drugs were already there. You know, all this stuff is kind of running in tandem with Lance Armstrong, if you really look at it. So, and there are two very similar sports that with similar drugs would do very well. You know, EPO, who just had the second EPO, you know, happen. BJ Penn, who just retired after his loss last week, when Chael Sonnen went down, he said, a big smile went across my face when I realized that people on HGH and EPO especially can be caught. You know, I'm paraphrasing him, but he just said they can get them now. You're going to see a lot more of it. So I think it's, you know, to get back to my grumpy Monday, which I guess for me is every day is Monday, so I'm writing a book about, you know, drug testing.
Everybody hates Mondays, exactly.
Yeah,
it's about
cleaning it up and like, doing it right. No more of the trophy hunting. Like, they, you know, we don't need to just talk about Chael Sonnen and say, oh, he was the only bad guy, or this guy. They got caught. The commissions need to step up across the board, and I think they need to get a third party involved. It isn't about them. I mean, maybe they can funnel some of the money to themselves. They can find a way to work with VADA, or maybe even just, you know, do that standard and charge these people. Dana White got busted, or not busted, but he was saying, like, he made $5 million, and he got kicked out of, like, the Palms, and he can't in Las Vegas. He can't gamble there anymore because he, like, didn't break the bank, but he was just winning too big. Too often, the offer out to his company from VADA is to test his fighters from anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000 per fighter. At that's somewhere in the range of like $1.6 million a year to 2.7, I think, something like that, at high end. And that's like 541 fighters year round, free administrative costs, just doing the test, just paying a cost to get it done, doing all that work, you know. Basically pro bono. They haven't even responded to it. But Dana can, like, blow that kind of money in a weekend gambling at the Palms or make it. So it's, you know, to say that it's not, it's too much money is ridiculous. It'll cost them too much money because too many people get caught. But I guarantee you, if you lock it down, there's some people that believe that cycling did get cleansed. I think it got also kind of killed. Nobody really cares anymore. But, you know, some people probably still do, just like people will always care about boxing. But it seems to me imperative that we take care of these guys. And so every day is going to be Monday for me until we get that fixed. And we do it in a fashion that isn't this weird, you know, Lance Armstrong goes on Oprah and apologizes, you know, to who? He's not sorry. He's sorry he got caught.
That's it.
You know, that whole pattern is, like, useless. We just need to actually fix the problem.
Here on Leaving the Ring Radio, I know, you know, we normally patch in some calls, which we're going to try to do. You know, we just got a lot of cover. I was on vacation last week. I only came on really shortly for the Terrence Crawford interview, and then Brian Fogg, lead writer for Leaving the Ring Radio, he took over and did an excellent job. He was the guy that was breaking all the Heyman reports. I've been writing about Al Heyman and what Al Heyman's been doing in the sport of boxing. So if you didn't have a chance to listen to that segment, you certainly can catch up with it on the archives of Leaving the Ring. Here, listen real quick. Listen, you know, we still got a few more minutes here on Leaving the Ring. I want to catch up. Alfonso Gomez, who hasn't fought in 2 years? In those two years, we had a chance to interview Alfonso Gomez in Oxnard, California. We were at the Boxing Extreme gym. You remember that, Gabriel? We were down there, and he came down and sat down along the side of us. And you know what's funny is well, here, before I even get into that, let me ask you something here. Paulie Malignaggi, dude, does this guy take volumes or something? Because he seems to have, like, a two kind of personalities. One, he's really hyper when he's on Showtime, but whenever he's on anybody else's network, like Fox Sports here, he's like in a monotone. It's like, Alfonso Gomez. But then you hear him on Showtime, he's just like, he's a speed rant. I kind of tripped out on that. I was like, what's wrong with this guy? What's up with them? Did the dye finally sink into the brain? Is that why he's kind of so hoppy in his rants on his Twitter when he goes to accusing Manny Pacquiao and then he backtracks that when he doesn't want to accuse the next guy when he's over talking about VADA but never takes the VADA testing? I just kind of find it a little weird, man. It's kind of following the trade of what he's been doing on Twitter, and it's just rolling over on his commentary from Mr. Hyper Paulie to a kind of a Mr. Bane from Batman, villain Paulie, you know? What do you think? It's kind of weird.
I just think he's kind of disingenuous, you know? You look at it and for him to do that on Twitter, a guy in his position, I just thought, like, well, what was that whole speech about vigilantism? And he was kind of, that speech right there, that segment on the show, was probably what he wanted to say to me the whole time he was on. He wanted to come at me, and it was the same thing like when I talked to Andre Ward, and he kind of seemed to bristle, but did not want to come out right and say, hey, I've got a problem with some of the way you've covered this PED thing. And I think both of them, and neither of them really, well, I addressed it with Andre, and, you know, I think Paulie, maybe I should have addressed it with him on the show, but he was so kind of passive-aggressive about it. For a guy that acts like he really is outspoken, and, you know, he kind of passes the buck a lot. Like, even when we said, like, why don't you talk about it? Well, I've kind of put it out there. I've done it enough. That's the thing is, you know, there's no end to it. I'm always, you know, and I'm good at other parts of boxing writing. I think when I put my mind to it, I'm one of the best in the gym reporters there is. I know how to kind of add a little bit something else to my story, and I have a good point of view, and I think I see the truth, and I'm certainly not afraid of saying it. I also interview fairly well. I mean, I spent my whole life doing theater and kind of attacking psychology and breaking it apart. I think I tend to bring out the best in people in their interviews and get answers that other people don't do. I wrote about mismatches, and I wrote about Angulo. I was one of the guys that just stayed with that story and then made calls on his behalf. I believe in advocate journalism. But I'll always be remembered for the drug thing because it's, like, really unpopular, and I won't leave it alone. And people just aren't really willing to do that anymore. I think that just needs to happen. So this, I don't know, this whole thing, you know, with Paulie, that he's done somehow, I don't get it. You know, you can't just bring it up a little bit and then, like, oh, well, I did that for a few years, and his information is wrong, you know. And I'm hearing whispers, too, that I've read this a few places, and that Paulie kind of went around in the U.K. when he was over there and was basically telling people that Sean Porter's on drugs, but, like, kind of saying it, you know, off record. But all media people talk to each other, and shit like that spreads really fast. If I'm Sean Porter, I kind of look at it and think about suing the guy. Because it's, you know, especially if he's clean, you know, if he gets into a drug testing program. But for Paulie's basically walking around and saying, well, I got doped, you know, against, and that's why I lost. And maybe he just got hammered, dude, by somebody else. Like, what, you're not beatable? You've been beat a bunch of times.
Right.
It was bound to happen that you were going to get stopped. That's generally the progression of aging fighters that are fighting out of their weight class, which I think Paulie was at 147. But it's, don't come on our show and call us vigilantes. You know, at least have the balls to ask me the question. You have me here in your sights. Ask me about the Floyd thing and why I printed that cease and desist. Ask me where the rest of the story is. Whatever. But have the balls to do it. Don't call us vigilantes. And then go on Twitter or even in the same interview and do the same damn thing. I mean, he really wanted – it was funny. It was like I was a vigilante until – I started agreeing with him about, you know, Manny and EPO use, or at least suspected EPO use. You know, then all of a sudden, it's okay for me to be fast and loose. Nobody has any facts. I have yet to ever connect anybody that specializes in EPO to that gym. You know, I know people that probably know of the drug, but, I wouldn't say anybody that's an expert. Nobody that I can say. I mean, now I guess Alex Arizo, you could say there's a guy with a positive, and he's got that checkered past with the Morales thing, where Morales complained that the vitamins he was given by Arizo damaged his liver, damaged his liver. There's that, you know. But other than that, I haven't seen anybody else go to print with anything. I did. That article did. Ramiro Gonzalez wrote it. That was a long time ago for La Opinion. So
right.
I think that, you know, that Paulie, what do I think of him kind of acting weird? I mean, I just think he's one way one place and one way another, but he keeps kind of selling us that it's the truth. And I see people, you know, he talks about corruption in the sport, but this is, again, the guy that bitched about Al Haymon and then acquiesced. It's a guy that you know, is afraid of who he works for to the point where he's not going to say it on the air. Well, it's not, you know, the time or place. Well, okay, but then you better do it right when you're somewhere else. When you can't just go on Twitter, you can't talk about people behind their back without any proof like that. At the very least, I can connect Floyd to a guy that owned an AIDS clinic that got shut down for selling tests to HGH and doing it improperly. Like, at the very least, I can do that. But you know, what does Paulie know that he's not saying about that gym? Like, come all the way out.
I think it's fair to say I really know how to push the buttons of Gabriel Montoya when I decide to throw something out there, guys. So anyways, going back with Afonso Gomez here and what is it, Paredes? See, look,
yeah.
Ed Paredes was supposed to be a guy that I honestly look 2 years off. Gomez comes back. I thought this was a really tough fight for Gomez. He goes in there and he kind of shows that, you know what, he's able to get back on that time machine. Now, not the time machine of like going back where he's like this ultra special fighter. He's never been a really special fighter, but he's been a fighter that has a really good enough resume where he's a gatekeeper, in my opinion, who really takes his job serious. I mean, he gave Porter a good run for his money. He was a guy that was outpointing Canelo in the first couple of rounds. He beat Soto Carras. This guy, You got to give him his props. You know, he really takes the gatekeeper position to heart. You know, and here's the thing that was pointed out by Paul Malignaggi. He said, look, this guy's been off for 2 years. Maybe it's because he's trying to decide whether or not he wants to continue a fight. No, I tell you what it was. He was on leaving the ring. We had a chance to sit him down, and there was a lot of bitterness in that interview. If you remember that, Gabriel, I mean, he had a lot to say about Golden Boy and how they were treating him and maneuvering him in the sport. He was not happy whatsoever, and he was like, I'm going to hang back until I see some better opportunities. I think that I have at least a good sizable name to get myself out there And, you know, rightfully so, because the guy, to me, has kept himself in condition. He's kept himself at least valuable to a fight fan to say, okay, he's worth still tuning in to watch. He's not a guy with a big punch. He's not a guy that's going to break into stardom anytime soon or ever anymore because he's kind of really past his prime. But really, he's stayed in his prime. He's not going to get any better. He's just going to be that one average dude that works really hard. He's a workhorse, and he's going to come, and he's going to come and do his job, and he takes his job very, very serious. So it was really, really good. Kudos for him. I enjoyed it. It was a junior middleweight. But other than that, it's not going to happen. Hey, tonight, because we're going to end this really quick, tonight is Mike Tyson. I got to tell you this. Mike Tyson Promotions, this is a good fight that's happening tonight here, and it's already started, I believe, so we're going to be getting off the air. But I'm going to tell you what. My last final thought about Mike Tyson's promotions here. I tell you what, he's doing a lot better than 50 Cent. And the reason why is because he's hiring the right people. Where 50 Cent is just too stubborn to kind of listen or to follow suit of trying to make a real promotional company out of his SMS. I got to tell you this over and over, and I've said this to numerous guys on the Gmail account or on Facebook or Twitter, 50 Cent is not a serious promoter. He's just a hobbyist. He just takes this as a hobby, and it's kind of sad because he's got fighters that really take this seriously. They want to be something special, but it's 50 Cent. You can't juggle as many careers as this guy has. He can't be good in all of them, and this is one of them. He's just not very good at, man. And Mike Tyson, to me, is doing the right thing. He understands he has a big name, but just like Oscar De La Hoya, you can have a big name, but it's not going to necessarily make the fact that you're going to have a great promotional company. You got to hire the right people. Final thoughts here, Gabriel, on Leaving the Ring before we end this episode.
SMS Promotions is what they should be called. Somebody that actually knows how to pick talent. How about that? Or actually promote shows. No, I'm just, you know, I'm curious. I mean, I thought Joseph Diaz really shined. You know, that was a hell of a fight that he was involved in last night. And I just think that kid is somebody that everybody should be paying attention to. He's just got all the tools, man. He works with Daryl Hudson. They've just been talking about him like he's getting better, he's getting better. And he was also at the WSB. So he's got that extra special experience level that most people don't have, and I think it's going to serve him well. But Ramiro Robles, man, no slouch himself. Somebody had to lose the fight, and he did. But man, that's a kid that I want to see also. It was kind of like it was crazy. They kind of were panning for gold in that fight. They came up with two pieces of gold. So tonight is the fight. You know, I thought Gomez looked serviceable. It's a good gatekeeper. I wasn't terribly excited by it, but you know, good fight nonetheless. Erickson Lubin, I've been watching this fight throughout while we're doing the show, and boy, he's got a lot to learn. A lot to learn, dude. He doesn't bring his right hand back after jabbing. He just leaves himself so wide open. He's stationary. He looks like he has no engine whatsoever. I mean, it's the fifth round. He looks tired.
A change of gear here really quick. I got to end my Everybody Hates Monday rant really quick. Russell Mora, you still suck as a ref. You got to get rid of this guy. I got to tell you this. Diego De La Hoya is a kid that he's in spurts. You can see there's some talent there. In spurts, you can see that he needs a lot of work to be, you know, to kind of embed in him. He's in there with Tamayo. Tamayo got his head knocked back. But he wasn't hurt. He wasn't rocked. It didn't look like he couldn't continue. It almost looked like this is the way Golden Boy is going to build Diego De La Hoya, the way they kind of did it with Canelo. When Canelo got hurt and then finally came through and showed some, I don't know, I guess some punching power, right away, immediately they jumped in and they waved the fight. Diego De La Hoya was never hurt in the fight, but when he showed some punching power, he showed some snap to the opponent's head, they automatically jumped in and waved it off. And Mora is the guy. You know what? It was a shitty call. He's a shitty ref. I don't want to ever see him again. Every time I see the guy, honestly, I just kind of cringe and I go, great, watch. This is just going to be terrible. He's called some good fights, but it's really rare he gets it right, in my opinion. Anyways, that's the end of Leading Ring Radio, man. Hey, everybody, enjoy the weekend. Don't drink and drive because you know what's going to happen. You're going to spill your beer. Mr. Gabriel Montoya, myself, Dave Duenas here, 97 Rough, The Dark Cloud. We're going to be zoning out.
Peace.